and Billy traveled in time to the zoo on Tralfamador. He was 44 years old, on display under a geodesic dome. He was reclining in the lounge chair which had been his cradle during his trip through space. He was naked. The Tralfamadorians were interested in his body, all of it. There were thousands of them outside, holding up their little hands so that their eyes could see him. Billy had been on Tralfamador for 6 Earthling months now. He was used to the crowd. Escape was out of the question. The atmosphere outside the dome was cyanide, and Earth was 446,120,000,000,000,000 miles away. Billy was displayed there in the zoo in a simulated Earthling habitat. Most of the furnishings had been stolen from the Sears Roebuck warehouse in Iowa City, Iowa. There was a color television set and a couch that could be converted into a bed. There were end tables with lamps and ashtrays on them by the couch. There was a home bar and 2 stools. There was a little pool table. There was wall-to-wall carpeting in federal gold, except in the kitchen and bathroom areas, and over the iron manhole cover in the center of the floor. There were magazines arranged in a fan on the coffee table in front of the couch. There was a stereophonic phonograph. The phonograph worked. The television didn't. There was a picture of one cowboy killing another one pasted to the television tube. So it goes. There were no walls in the dome, no place for Billy to hide. The mint green bathroom fixtures were right out in the open. Billy got off his lounge chair now, went into the bathroom, and took a leak. The crowd went wild. Billy brushed his teeth on Tralfamador, put in his partial denture, and went into his kitchen. His bottled gas range and his refrigerator and his dishwasher were mint green, too. There was a picture painted on the door of the refrigerator. The refrigerator had come that way. It was a picture of a gay 90s couple on a bicycle built for two. Billy looked at that picture now, tried to think something about the couple. Nothing came to him. There didn't seem to be anything to think about those two people. Billy ate a good breakfast from cans. He washed his cup and plate and knife and fork and spoon and saucepan, put them away. Then he did exercises he had learned in the army: straddle jumps, deep knee bends, sit-ups, and push-ups. Most Tralfamadorians had no way of knowing Billy's body and face were not beautiful. They supposed that he was a splendid specimen. This had a pleasant effect on Billy, who began to enjoy his body for the first time. He showered after his exercises and trimmed his toenails. He shaved and sprayed deodorant under his arms. While a zoo guide on a raised platform outside explained what Billy was doing and why, the guide was lecturing telepathically, simply standing there, sending out thought waves to the crowd. On the platform with him was the little keyboard instrument with which he would relay questions to Billy from the crowd. Now the first question came from the speaker on the television set. "Are you happy here?" "About as happy as I was on Earth," said Billy Pilgrim, which was true. There were 5 sexes on Tralfamador, each of them performing a step necessary in the creation of a new individual. They looked identical to Billy, because their sex differences were all in the 4th dimension. One of the biggest moral bombshells handed to Billy by the Tralfamadorians, incidentally, had to do with sex on Earth. They said their flying saucer crews had identified no fewer than 7 sexes on Earth, each essential to reproduction. Again, Billy couldn't possibly imagine what 5 of those 7 sexes had to do with the making of a baby, since they were sexually active only in the 4th dimension. The Tralfamadorians tried to give Billy clues that would help him imagine sex in the invisible dimension. They told him that there could be no Earthling babies without male homosexuals. There could be babies without female homosexuals. There couldn't be babies without women over 65 years old. There could be babies without men over 65. There couldn't be babies without other babies who had lived an hour or less after birth. And so on. It was gibberish to Billy. There was a lot that Billy said that was gibberish to the Tralfamadorians, too. They couldn't imagine what time looked like to him. Billy had given up on explaining that. The guide outside had to explain as best he could. The guide invited the crowd to imagine that they were looking across a desert at a mountain range on a day that was twinkling bright and clear. They could look at a peak, or a bird, or a cloud, at a stone right in front of them, or even down into a canyon behind them. But among them was this poor earthling, and his head was encased in a steel sphere which he could never take off. There was only one eye hole through which he could look, and welded to that eye hole were 6 feet of pipe. This was only the beginning of Billy's miseries in the metaphor. He was also strapped to a steel lattice which was bolted to a flat car on rails, and there was no way he could turn his head or touch the pipe. The far end of the pipe rested on a bipod, which was also bolted to the flat car. All Billy could see was the little dot at the end of the pipe. He didn't know he was on a flat car, didn't even know there was anything peculiar about his situation. The flat car sometimes crept, sometimes went extremely fast, often stopped, went uphill, downhill, around curves, along straightaways. Whatever poor Billy saw through the pipe, he had no choice but to say to himself, "That's life." Billy expected the Tralfamadorians to be baffled and alarmed by all the wars and other forms of murder on Earth. He expected them to fear that the Earthling combination of ferocity and spectacular weaponry might eventually destroy part or maybe all the innocent universe. Science fiction had led him to expect that. But the subject of war never came up until Billy brought it up himself. Somebody in the zoo crowd asked him through the lecturer what the most valuable thing he had learned on Tralfamador was so far. And Billy replied, "How the inhabitants of a whole planet can live in peace. As you know, I am from a planet that has been engaged in senseless slaughter since the beginning of time. I myself have seen the bodies of schoolgirls who were boiled alive in a water tower by my own countrymen, who were proud of fighting pure evil at the time." This was true. Billy saw the boiled bodies in Dresden. "And I have lit my way in a prison at night with candles from the fat of human beings who were butchered by the brothers and fathers of those schoolgirls who were boiled. Earthlings must be the terrors of the universe. If other planets aren't now in danger from Earth, they soon will be. So tell me the secret so I can take it back to Earth and save us all. How can a planet live at peace?" Billy felt that he had spoken soaringly. He was baffled when he saw the Tralfamadorians close their little hands on their eyes. He knew from past experience what this meant. He was being stupid. Would you mind telling me," he said to the guide, much deflated, "what was so stupid about that?" "We know how the universe ends," said the guide, "and Earth has nothing to do with it, except that it gets wiped out too." "How? How does the universe end?" said Billy. "We blow it up, experimenting with new fuels for our flying saucers. A Tralfamadorian test pilot presses a starter button, and the whole universe disappears." "So it goes." "If you know this," said Billy, "isn't there some way you can prevent it? Can't you keep the pilot from pressing the button?" "He has always pressed it, and he always will. We always let him, and we always will let him. The moment is structured that way." "So," said Billy gropingly, "I suppose that the idea of preventing war on Earth is stupid too?" "Of course. But you do have a peaceful planet here." "Today we do. On other days, we have wars as horrible as any you've ever seen or read about. There isn't anything we can do about them, so we simply don't look at them. We ignore them. We spend eternity looking at pleasant moments, like today at the zoo. Isn't this a nice moment? Yes. That's one thing Earthlings might learn to do if they tried hard enough. Ignore the awful times and concentrate on the good ones. Said Billy Pilgrim. Shortly after he went to sleep that night, Billy traveled in time to another moment, which was quite nice. His wedding night with the former Valencia Merble. He had been out of the veterans' hospital for 6 months. He was all well. He had graduated from the Ilium School of Optometry, third in his class of 47. Now he was in bed with Valencia in a delightful studio apartment, which was built on the end of a wharf on Cape Ann, Massachusetts. Across the water were the lights of Gloucester. Billy was on top of Valencia, making love to her. One result of this act would be the birth of Robert Pilgrim, who would become a problem in high school, but who would then straighten out as a member of the famous Green Berets. Valencia wasn't a time traveler, but she did have a lively imagination. While Billy was making love to her, she imagined that she was a famous woman in history. She was being Queen Elizabeth I of England, and Billy was supposedly Christopher Columbus. Billy made a noise like a small, rusty hinge. He had just emptied his seminal vesicles into Valencia, had contributed his share of the Green Beret. According to the Tralfamadorians, of course, the Green Beret would have 7 parents in all. Now he rolled off his huge wife, whose rapt expression did not change when he departed. He lay with the buttons of his spine along the edge of the mattress, folded his hands behind his head. He was rich now. He had been rewarded for marrying a girl nobody in his right mind would have married. His father-in-law had given him a new Buick Roadmaster, an all-electric home, and had made him manager of his most prosperous office, his Ilium office, where Billy could expect to make at least $30,000 a year. That was good. His father had been only a barber. As his mother said, "The pilgrims are coming up in the world."